From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in East Oakland.
Cleveland Heights.
I live in Adams Point.
West Oakland.
Coming up, we'll talk with a doctor about what she thinks is the most universally useful medical treatment.
If I were stuck on a desert island and I only had one drug, marijuana for sure is what I would choose.
Then we learn how senior citizens are discovering the benefits of the plant they may have rejected long ago.
I never enjoyed it. You know, it was always something that was just a little weird. It just wasn't fun. I'd rather have a beer.
And we'll share our memories of Frank Kwan, the last resident of China Camp State Park, who died last week.
I know the panic of that wish to save the vital knowledge of the old times handed down. For it is rising off the earth, fraying away in the wind in the coming day.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. In November, California voters will decide whether or not to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. It's Prop 64 on your ballot. Already, the medicinal use of marijuana has been legal since voters passed a proposition back in 1996. But there's still some confusion and stigma around the plant's use, and much of that traces to public service announcements produced by the federal government, like this one from 1969.
Marijuana is an intoxicating, mind-muddling drug. Its use can lead to abnormal behavior, to psychological dependence, and to abuse of other drugs. The human brain, after all, is made for thinking, not fumigating. It's hardly a tinker toy for experimenting with drugs. This has been the public service message of the American Medical Association and your local station.
Later in the show, we'll hear from some Bay Area seniors who may remember that commercial. We'll join them as they take a field trip to learn more about the healing properties of cannabis. But first, we'll hear from Dr. Lori Volan. She heads Naturally Healing MD in Albany, where she consults on the science of medical marijuana and instructs on its therapeutic use. KALW's Ben Trefney reached her at her office.
What are the properties, then, that make cannabis a healing plant?
I wouldn't describe it as a healing plant. I would describe it as medicinally effective for a broad spectrum of symptoms, and, you know, broad enough that it would take care of a large number of ailments that patients come in seeking care from primary care physicians. Pain, anxiety, depression, insomnia. Those are sort of the top hitters in any primary care practice. And in my experience with marijuana, I would say that it is beneficial across all of those symptoms and really should not be considered a last resort, but should be considered a first-line treatment for those ailments.
Well, actually, you know, in doing some research for this conversation, I saw that the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 is what effectively outlawed marijuana. And before that, it was widely used for a wide variety of healing.
That's right.
So do you think it's comparable then to any other medicines?
I actually don't think it's comparable to any other medicines because I don't know of any pharmaceuticals that have as wide-ranging a versatility as marijuana. If I were stuck on a desert island and I only had one drug was going to be available to me, marijuana for sure is what I would choose because it is so effective across such a wide variety of symptoms.
So is consumption of marijuana, is that something that's addictive?
Well, there are lots of studies that look at young adult use, beginning usually in the teens, and they do describe a syndrome usually with young adults who have begun heavy consumption during their adolescence having difficulty withdrawing from marijuana, and that difficulty entails change in mood, change in sleep patterns, and general anxiety. So it doesn't have the addictive properties of benzodiazepines and opiates, but it does have properties that make it difficult for some patients to stop using without experiencing those kinds of withdrawal symptoms.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think one of the biggest problems right now with medical marijuana is the lack of information and use by the older patient population. There is very low usage amongst older adults. It comes in at less than 4% in some of the studies. And then when you get to patients that are over the age of 64, it drops down to less than 1%. And this is the population that has a multitude of problems that are oftentimes effectively treated with marijuana with far less side effects than the pharmaceutical alternatives. So older adults and marijuana, I think, is a prime area for more investment in time and resources.
That was Dr. Lori Volin. She spoke with KLW's Ben Trefney.
We begin tonight with the controversy over medical marijuana and the recent revelation that seniors are the fastest growing group taking up pot. A warning, this report does contain drug references.
Australia legalized the medicinal use of marijuana in February. And while it's been legal here in California for two decades now, many older people don't know how to apply for a medical marijuana card or how to gain entrance to a dispensary or even why they would want to in the first place. So an Oakland cannabis dispensary is pairing with senior service organizations to change the hearts and minds and prescriptions.
Oh my God, it's terrible. It's already 82 over there.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I think Kelly's going to take us in and guide the way.
A van with about a dozen passengers has just arrived at Harborside Health Center, a medical marijuana dispensary on Oakland's Embarcadero.
I'll tell you this right here before we go on over there. We'll start on the outside. We'll gather together.
Kelly Quirk, Harborside's community engagement coordinator, greets the visitors who've come from the Rossmore Senior Community in Walnut Creek.
All right, let's wander right over here.
And before you get the wrong impression, this bunch isn't here to investigate altered states.
No. I don't want to get high.
They're here to learn about medical marijuana, or as Don Lustelet, one of today's visitors, says,
I don't use marijuana. I use cannabis.
Harborside's Kelly Quirk says many seniors are going through a learning curve on this topic.
We find a lot of times that seniors who are the people who could use these medicines almost more than any other demographic part of the population don't know very much about it. They suffer from the stigma around it.
Starting with the basics, Quirk tells today's potential customers that the plant's best known compound is THC.
That's the one that makes you high. The one that's second most known and the second most prevalent in the plant is CBD, cannabidiol. That's the non-psychoactive one that has a lot of healing properties. Now I have to say THC has a lot of healing properties as well. All right, are there any questions so far? Yes, sir.
Do you have people that you can talk to regarding what your problem is and what to take?
Absolutely. So every single one of those people who usually get called bud tenders, right? I always think that we need a new word and then I think, I like that word, you know?
That was Don Lustelet again asking the question. He's been using cannabis-based creams and lotions for a couple of years to relieve his peripheral neuropathy, which causes severe pain in his feet.
I've had operations, I've had acupuncture, I've had chiropractic care where they have the lasers and it didn't work.
Lustelet says all he remembers from his one experience with smoking pot as a kid is that it made him choke, so he never did it again. Wendy Robertson, another member of this tour, also tried it recreationally as a teen.
I never enjoyed it. You know, it was always something that was just a little weird. It just wasn't fun. I'd rather have a beer.
This visit to Harborside was coordinated by the Medical Marijuana Education and Support Club at Rossmore. When Robertson first heard about this group, she dismissed it entirely.
I was thinking, oh, you guys are just a bunch of potheads belonging to this group.
But after learning more about the club, she realized she was wrong.
I was just ignorant. I didn't know what it could do. I didn't know about the medical properties.
And once she found out, she actually apologized.
It wasn't a big deal apology, but I did say, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was so you know, judgmental, thinking you guys are a bunch of potheads, even to my husband. No, you guys are just a bunch of potheads. And they're not. There's a medical component to this.
Robertson was on a car trip when she first tried medical cannabis. She got it because her back was bothering her.
I can remember being in the car and undoing the bottle, and I was a little nervous. I just put a little bit on. I go, okay, Kurt, if I get weird, that's my husband. If I get weird, watch me, you know, because I have no idea what to expect. And so I rubbed some on my lower back, and I think it was maybe 15, 20 minutes. It was noticeable improvement. I could tell that my back was feeling better. And I remember thinking, God, this is so wild. And he's, you know, are you feeling high or anything? I go, no, nothing like that.
Harborside's Kelly Quirk finds it ironic that so many older people are afraid of the psychoactive component of cannabis.
Because it's also the population that grew up in the 60s. So these are the people who started smoking it as a large demographic group in the United States, you know.
Inside the Harborside building, Quirk's presentation to his guests includes two numbers.
This is the number of people who are killed in alcohol-related deaths in the United States every year, 88,500. This is the number of people who die from cannabis overdoses, zero. Which one's legal?
That's not quite comparing apples to apples. And to say that cannabis or marijuana is trouble-free would be overstating the truth by far. Quirk says his figures are from the Centers for Disease Control, which reports that in 2015, an average of 6 people died specifically of alcohol poisoning every day. The CDC also says that in 2014, there was one death in Colorado linked solely to marijuana consumption. It's the only one since the state approved recreational use of marijuana in 2012. Still, why not just use over-the-counter medications? Wendy Robertson can answer that.
You know, I could probably use Motrin, but why? It's got terrible side effects. Why would I do that? I don't even like to take aspirin unless I absolutely have to.
According to the online Marijuana Business Daily, the majority of medical cannabis patients report using it for pain relief, ranging from arthritis to migraines. Critics note that it's all anecdotal evidence and any relief is only temporary. But that's true of any pain reliever. And as Wendy Robertson says, seeing is believing.
I tell anybody to go. Get over yourself. Come. This could help, right? It's helping people. I've seen people it's helped. I've heard their stories.
It's been said that the person with the most options is the healthiest. And at least for these seniors, one of those options is medical cannabis. At Harborside Health Center in Oakland, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
Harborside Health Center offers a free monthly senior support group in addition to a Medical Cannabis 101 forum twice a month. You can stay informed on developments on this topic through Stephen Short's Cannabis News Roundup. New editions are published on Fridays at klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. A long life, well lived, can be a gift to many people. Last week, the Bay Area said farewell to Frank Kwan, who for 90 years kept his doors open to friends and strangers alike at China Camp State Park. Frank's secluded spot on the beach on the San Pablo Bay was staked out by his grandfather in the 1890s, back when China Camp was one of a few dozen Chinese fishing villages dotting the Bay Area shores. The settlement became a state park in the late 70s, and Frank's lifelong residency was written into the park's general plan. He lived out the rest of his life there in the wooden shacks where he grew up. He lived all by himself, but he was hardly ever alone. KALW's Julie Kane brings us his story.
Frank Kwan's porch is not really a porch. It's a couple of weather-worn picnic tables on the gravel beach just a few feet from the bay.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. Thirsty?
Thirsty, right here.
Right now, it's cocktail hour. It's a daily ritual for Frank Kwan and his friend John Muir.
My name's John Muir. No relation.
Yes, not that John Muir.
I'm Frank Kwan.
You got a knife, Frank? The man.
The two of them have been friends for almost 20 years. Muir has a wood shop a few buildings down the beach from Kwan's house. It all started when Kwan stopped by the San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park.
Yeah, I went over there a few times looking for a part for a engine. Yeah, that's where I first met him, and then tangled with his boss several times. Yeah.
Growled at him, I'm sure.
Growled at him.
We're like, he said, you got a whole box of parts in there. You know, why can't I get one of those? It's crazy.
Muir works for the National Park Service. He's a builder and curator of old boats. And the engine part Kwan wanted was a historic artifact to everybody except Frank Kwan. For him, it was just something he needed to keep things running at China Camp. And that piqued John Muir's interest.
I talked to him more about it, and he started ranting about that again, and finally just decided, listen, you don't understand. We're trying to do the same thing. We'll see what we can do. I remember getting kind of flustered with him, and he just started kind of laughing. I was like, I gave it back to him a little bit.
There's folks on fitting there, John. It's going to be tricky to get that out of there.
These days, the two friends get out on the water together whenever they can. Usually, they take out Frank's old fishing boat. It's seen better days.
It's been actually the last couple years, lots of repairs, some few mishaps, and lots of effort just to keep it up and running, which I think is just good for Frank. I think he loses his mind when the boat doesn't work. So he's also damn handsome when he's at the helm here running it. You going to shoot between, Frank?
Oh, yeah. Hope we don't get stuck.
They come out just to be on the water, but sometimes they try their hand at catching shrimp. Kwan says he used to bring it in by the ton, but nowadays they're lucky if they catch a hatful. Water diversion and overfishing have killed off much of the sea life. It's a part of Kwan's life that's gone for good.
It's sad. In a 30-year period, it's gone, and I'm never going to come back. And that's the hard part. Yeah.
Could be interviewing Frank every night and writing things down and recording this whole experience, but then it's just living it.
We're sitting in Muir's wood shop at China Camp. It's where he spends a couple days every week working on boats and talking to Kwan.
Somebody was just telling me about this quote from Wendell Berry that was about if you meet somebody like that, you should ask them questions and, you know, record what they say and think. But if you can actually get a chance just to be with them or to be one of them, that's first.
It's actually a poem by Wendell Berry, and Muir thinks about it a lot. It's called The Record.
My old friend tells us how the country changed, how the creek ran 3 weeks after a good rain, long ago, no more. You'd have to know this country mighty well before I could tell you where.
Muir's latest project is a historic Italian fishing boat that he's building by looking at faded photographs. The bay used to be full of these boats, but they don't come with plans.
Both the Chinese and the Italians sort of started out as fishermen here and then went on and left a lot of those traditions behind for more lucrative businesses or just rising through the social scale. So a lot of their culture is, you know, and the boats and the rig and all those things are such the everyday meditation of these people.
About 10 years ago, he built a 19th century Chinese fishing boat called a junk. Just like with the Italian boat, Muir built it from old photos and the burned out husks of a couple of junks they dredged up out of the mud next to Frank's house. Muir named the reconstructed boat the Grace Kwan, after Frank's mother.
My mother was Caucasian, raised by a Chinese person as a child, so she spoke Chinese fluently.
A white woman who lived among Chinese people her whole life at a time when that was unheard of. She first came to China camp on an outing with a friend, and that's when she met Frank's dad.
They had to go to Nevada to get married, and they couldn't get married here in California.
Yeah. Why couldn't they get married?
Because it wasn't allowed. Mixed marriage.
It was illegal. But she moved to China camp with Frank's dad anyway and lived out the rest of her life there. She ran the family businesses, a general store, a cafe, and boat rentals for weekend picnickers. She'd grown up an orphan, and she treated everyone who came there like they were her own kids. China camp still has that same feel, even long after her death.
And my young friend says, have him speak this into recorder. It is precious. It should be saved. I know the panic of that wish to save the vital knowledge of the old times, handed down, for it is rising off the earth, fraying away in the wind in the coming day.
Frank, one thing it might be nice is to, if you could man a stern line.
Yeah,
because we'll hold that until we get off. That way I can power out and then we'll cast off.
Yeah, get over there. Okay? Get your boat over
get
here.
Get my boat turned into the current.
The boat named for Frank's mother is Seaworthy. It's about 40 feet long, wooden, and stained black, with one tall mast and a copper-colored sail shaped kind of like a bat's wing. It looks old, and it looks handmade.
Is there any Frank Kwan in this boat?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, Frank was really good because he's a fisherman. He's pretty, wants to get the boat running and things going, and he's also Depression era, so he doesn't want to spend a damn nickel on it. And so there's a lot of, he was great because, you know, our tendency is always to go fancier, cleaner, perfect fits. And Frank's like, get that thing nailed in, you know. So I think Frank saw anywhere there's a rough edge and, you know, that's Frank in there, I think. And he was like our fancy police, you know. You guys, it's not a yacht, damn it, it's a work boat. Now, you get that thing nailed in there yet?
After another day's boat ride, we're back at the picnic table, Frank's porch. It's cocktail hour, and he set out olives he brined himself, some cheese, and good bread.
He's pretty good company.
Oh, yeah, good company. We've always got somebody rolling in. Sometimes we have new plan for two, and then always have got six or seven.
Yeah, some.
We always round up something for me.
That's a kind of incredible thing about China camp is, you know, Grace grew up in an orphanage, but and I'm feeling it too, is that there's this whole sense that I'm just one of not many friends of theirs that forever that have been coming here, building boats, helping them straighten things out, take care of the place. Like it's a real like orphanage sort of place where they just welcome, super welcoming. I mean, Frank still is like in the middle of a park and there's people coming by all the time. And, you know, we'll just lay out a meal for whoever shows up, you know, and just, it's like this spirit. And I think it's as a key factor in this place is like that's that sort of orphanage spirit. It's like, I think that's the core of the place. And it's amazing, amazing thing. Live here as one who knows these things. Stay if you live. Listen and answer. Listen to the next one like him, if there is to be one. Be the next one like him, if you must.
There's a tradition in Chinese culture, one that Frank's mom taught him. When someone dies, you put a little food out for them, something they liked. It's a way to take care of people, to make sure they have what they need.
Oh, yeah,
well, Frank will be putting out a little bit of scotch for you. good cheese.
A little shot of a little single malt out, you know.
I don't know about that. No, okay, whatever you want.
For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.
That piece originally aired in 2014. Frank Kwan died last week. We're setting out some single malt and good cheese for you, Frank. And that's our show for today. Our team includes Leela Day, Nicole Grigg, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Jürgen Klemm, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, and Mary Lee Williams. The show was engineered by James Rowlands. The line producer was Liza Veal. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by jazz pianist Grant Levin and his quartet. John Santos himself says it's always an adventure and a pleasure to play with him. You can hear the Grant Levin duo at Bird and Beckett in San Francisco's Glen Park neighborhood on the second and fourth Saturdays of the month at 4 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.